Genau das war sein Flair. Er war ein Virtuose, war ein Rock-Idol. Und alle suchten noch heute Captain Rock.
WRCT Pittsburgh, produced by the students in Contextual Practice Seminar. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily express those of WRCT Pittsburgh or its members.
Wait, so who, like, we're going in the circle?
No.
Wait a second, whose instrument is what?
Everyone's just jumping in.
Okay. Yours is that? Oh, are we having a conversation?
No.
No,
no, no.
We're
no.
having a conversation.
We're doing sounds.
An instrument conversation. Oh. Yeah, it's going to be so good.
Okay. All right. Are we ready?
I'm going to have an argument with you at some point.
How do we feel? What are the takeaways? What do people feel?
I'm feeling breathless.
Interesting. Say more.
I'm literally out of breath from playing the harmonica.
Oh, yeah.
I'm feeling playful.
Yeah.
I'm feeling very playful at the moment.
Do you think it's the microphones or all of the instrument toys that we're playing with?
I think just the exercise that we did. We were all just playing with sound, things that make sound.
And with each other.
And with each other.
Yeah, I feel like there was a moment, Ashley, when you were honestly playing like a cat, which was kind of fun to witness and watch and listen to how it came through.
How did I miss that?
I missed that
too. You were batting it like...
I love that.
Were you channeling cowboy?
Yes, I was channeling the action of cowboy. Cowboy was Annie's cat.
Yes.
Cowboy was here with us.
Yes.
Tonight. In spirit, yeah.
But yeah, I agree with Amina. I feel very playful. It reminds me of like, I don't know, being a toddler.
Yes.
And just like not really, it's just like there's a freedom of just playing with the sounds and also feeding off of each other, because I think that we all... There were certain points where our sounds like started to play off of one another, which was nice.
Yeah.
So that was really fun, actually.
Maybe we could sample those and then like turn them into a real piece.
Yeah.
Or no, sorry, not a real piece.
I had the most fun when you were using our mouths to make the sound.
That was a nice addition.
That was a really good one.
Yeah, that really changed the kind of game at the 10-minute mark or something.
Also, if we had had like a Lazy Susan in the middle and we could have passed the different instruments around.
Yeah, I wonder what some rules would have generated. Like, you can only play this instrument for a minute and then you have to switch or something. Yes.
Back to the sound. I think I really enjoyed how we were all learning. I think you were the one who's most proficient in like how these things
as the
work.
Musician, yes.
Yeah, or as someone who bought these in.
Yeah. I have experience with all of them. Yes.
Yeah, at first I tried all of these separately.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe what's in front of you?
I've got a frog.
Okay, a wooden frog.
Which has a hole in it.
A hole that has a little tool that you can play along its spine.
Yes.
Can you demonstrate?
So, the higher you are on the scales, the bigger the sound, and then it goes lower into its frequency.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
And then I've got a bell that... Okay, so this is interesting. I don't know what it has inside, but it's the shape of a bell, but it doesn't make a sound a bell usually would. Mm-hmm. That was a surprise. It's like a jingle. What's this called?
A harmonica.
A harmonica. And I've got a harmonica that I just learned how to use. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This was fun.
One thing that I learned from Logan when we were sitting here and pulling these out is that Logan has one of these at home.
Yeah, I have that exact one. As that was my childhood harmonica.
And I will tell you guys, this is a great gift if you ever have to buy a gift for like a one-year-old. Right. Because it's they can do it. And they will walk, like the girls used to walk around with these in their mouths, just going, ooh, ooh, like... Look for hours.
I love that.
They were just
endless play.
It's like a curse for their parents.
You know what though? This sound is not the worst. Right now they're learning recorders in school.
Mm, that is the worst. Yeah.
That's the worst.
Yeah. That might. Or when my stepson Simon tried to learn the saxophone. That was really bad.
Oh gosh.
For me, channeling. Sorry, Simon. The most familiar instrument, a flute.
Yeah. You were good at that.
Probably because, like, this is the one that I had growing up to. I think that this is, a flute in particular, is a very Indian subcontinent thing. Mm-hmm. So this is something that you have in all the ancient stories and stuff. So I remember when I was in high school, I played the boy who was trying to get a girl in as part of a theater drama. Mm. And I completely learned how to do this from scratch. So I could. But that was a wooden one. And this one's a metal one.
I know. Did it have the side?
Oh, you've got a bigger
one,
too.
Yeah, there's one, and I was trying to play it, but I...
Yeah, no, you got to hold all of the doors.
Yeah.
Food
is not my
thing.
I personally had the egg, which I really loved. I mean, what's more satisfying than this device? It's kind of endless joy. And then the Rudolph bells, which are a little too Christmassy for me.
Yeah, they do have that.
Yeah.
No matter what we do, we can't get away from that sound.
Yeah.
I had these two. What are these called again?
Maracas.
Well, actually, no. You have one maraca.
We traded.
We traded the two maracas, and then I used this.
I don't know.
This basket weaving.
Yeah. Little basket with bells in it. And then I also use these drumsticks, which were fun.
Yeah, the drumsticks alternated a lot between people.
You were also using the, Annie, you were using the drumsticks in the beginning, but differently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing?
Yeah, the rolling was nice. I don't know what it sounded like on the recording, but I hope it came through.
I also have a not complicated relationship with music, but I like Pakistan, not to generalize as a country, but music is like in the religion haram, but then there's music that's used in a religious sense that becomes acceptable suddenly. So living between that tension as to what's acceptable and what's not has been interesting. But I grew up with a lot of Justin Bieber. Something that I don't
haram.
Okay. Very.
You are listening to
The Sound of Language
on WRCT Pittsburgh. Produced by the students in Contextual Practice Seminar. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily express those of WRCT Pittsburgh or its members.
This is a story called Rhythm Travel from the book Tales of the Out and the Gone. Your boy always do that. You knock, somebody say, come in. You open the door, look around, call out, nobody there, you think. But then at once, music comes on. If you watching, there's a bluish shaking that flickers. Maybe Mysterioso will surround you. The music is wavering like light. The room seems to shift, to step. Then you recognize what you hear. Man, oh, brother, you at it again. You in here, ain't you? A laugh. This dude. Yeah, I'm in here. You hear me. You feel me. Here I am. He appears laughing and pointing at you. Hey, man, I'm still developing this. What you call it? Inescape, the first one. Then molecular inescape. Then the resoul locator. That was the improvement. T disappear. Nicknames. Perfect. American citizen. Illisonic migration. I got a name for each step. And now I roll my eyes as he got completely out next to me, dissing the diss report on appearance. This is the next to last. I can disappear. Dis visibility, be unseen. But now I can be around anyway, perceived, felt, heard. I can be the music. Yeah, but now I got something even heavier. This dude is out. It ain't no jive. He had actually done these things, and he never swore me to secrecy either. He just fixed it so I couldn't remember nothing except when I came back. Further out, the cloth refiner, the cloth refiner. He said he needed to make the cloth fade more so he could get in and out of the bank without any hysteria. It took a few hundred thousand to get where he was technically. How come they don't detect the money splitting? Well, I ain't been able to stabilize the cloth thing. Sometimes people see the money floating off, but I still get away. How come they don't say nothing? Well, it's hard to explain. I guess floating money, they studying it. Oh. A few weeks more, I'll rob all these mammy jammers clean. Wow, I thought of a stream of exclamations, but I could only analyze it while hearing it. I needed to reflect, but your boy wouldn't allow it. But now, B, dig this. I pushed the Inescape into rhythm spectroscopic transformation, and then I got it tuned to combine the anywhereness and the reappearance as music. What? Brother, you know this is some deep technical stuff. Oh, no, it ain't. It's science. I can teach people how to make and use these. What? Now I added rhythm travel. You can disappear and reappear wherever and whenever that music is played. What? So if you become black, brown, and beige, you can reappear anywhere and anytime that plays. Go anywhere? Yeah, like if I go into, say, Take This Hammer, I can appear wherever that is, was, and will be sung. Yeah, but be that song, you'd be on a plantation. I know. He was grinning. I went to one. He was staring me down, winking without his eye. I seen some brothers and sisters digging a well. They were singing this, and I began to echo, a big hollow echo, a sort of blue shattering echo. The bloods got to smiling because it made them feel good, and that's the way they heard it anyway. But the overseers and plantation masters winced at that. They'd turn their heads sharply back and forth, looking behind them and at the slaves. Man, the stuff I see. You mean you've been rhythm traveling already? Yeah, I turned into some sun ra and hung out inside gravity. You probably heard of the scattering comet. Babs was into that. Really? Man, so I know why, what I'm going to do with it. Yeah, but I'm just explaining now. I got a lot of tests. I guess so. But I want you to try it. Hey, hey, brother, ain't no danger. Just don't pick a corny tune.
You are listening to The Sound of Language on WRCT Pittsburgh, produced by the students in Contextual Practice Seminar. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily express those of WRCT Pittsburgh or its members.
So that piece that we just listened to was called Rhythm Travel by Amiri Baraka, who is a poet. And it was a piece that artist Petra Floyd shared with us in preparation of her visit. So,
do you know the context in which she or they wanted us to think about that piece?
She didn't provide any additional context, but I'm familiar with his work, and I think in thinking about it in relationship to her piece at the park and the piece where she places the transducers on this metal sculpture, and there are a bunch of improvisational musicians playing on them. I think that there's the what I get from it is thinking about how sound can transport someone.
Yeah.
Like literally in the case of the poem.
Exactly.
Like a time travel versus in the case of Petra's piece to a different time-space continuum kind of, or mentality or something.
There was a mention in Petra's piece, but also the language that was being used in this one to futurism. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I think, going back to your question, the context, I think technology, techno-capitalism, and Afrofuturism as a genre is what this text is about. And also that is also what Petra was hinting a lot at. In the thesis, yes.
I mean, so many of these sounds or instruments that have been around for hundreds of years, and I think there's something exciting about that kind of connection to past times and like instruments that people could get their hands on, or instruments that didn't have to be kind of so specific. I think there's something fun about watching Petra's work that you were just speaking about in the park, where there's like all these different things that come into play and they can have such different impacts based on how they're played or used.
Or recorded.
Yeah.
Or played. Yeah, or listened to.
Yeah,
I think the critical question is that many of these things, even though they exist for 100 years, they don't extend beyond beyond the center of the world from where they originally were. Or no, that's I think the wrong way to approach it. Let's say music has always been around in different cultures everywhere in the world, but then there's a dominant one. And that it becomes dominant because it's in a certain city, in a certain country, and certain people get to define
what that genre means for the rest of the world.
It's not just genre, it's even scales. Like, different scales are prominent in different areas of the world. They actually will have, like, different orders of notes that make up different, you know.
I mean, even if you just look at futurism, there is futurism, but then the Hollywood futurism will only mostly perpetuate, I don't know, a Greek mythological narrative.
Mm.
Or you will see, like, you will see a white hetero person as the lead always, and that is futurism. Where it becomes problematic is, like, that futurism is not extended to any community beyond that. Whereas the production, the result of it, is most definitely, it even comes into, like, I grew up on Hollywood. I grew up watching white men on TV, just with a different language. Like, that is what the extent of that is. So that, I do think that Afrofuturism in that way becomes very, very powerful. And then it, like, for me, it would need even more extension to the so-called third word to have even more genres included into it.
You're talking about the idea that in order for people of color or minority groups to see themselves in the future, that they need to be represented in future-looking media.
Well, the whole idea of what a future is would be different. Like, we talk about post-humanism, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is a major concern in the West right now, like, everyone's speaking about AI. But then there are, like, majority of the world cannot even think of those problems yet, because they've got, like, very big, like, so, like, futurism also is not universal. It's very specific to the West. I think we're all in the setting of academia right now, and I think this is very much a problem within these discourses, where these things become so generalized. Like, I don't have to deal with the problem of post-humanism right now.
I guess I wanted to offer that question back to everybody and ask you if there is a song that for you transports you to a certain time and place that you want to share, which if you think of a song and you want to describe it, that would be great.
Yeah, I can start.
That would be great.
Yeah, I have a lot of these, and actually my kids have a lot of these too. We talk about this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to do an easy one because, I don't know, a lot of them are about death. And we don't need to do that right now.
It's sad.
What?
It's so sad.
I know. Well, just because I feel like the, like, in mourning, if I end up listening to something, I'll do it on repeat. And then it really gets, like, ingrained in that one moment. But there's this song that's called The Two Keneally's, which, do you know this song?
No.
Oh, sorry, Logan made a face at me. Which is an Irish ballad about two fishermen that go out to sea and don't come home, and about the mourning that's around that. But it... That song very specifically takes me to when I was in Ireland, and we wandered out to, I think I was like 16, and we wandered out after dinner at our bed and breakfast, wherever we were, and went to, like, the only possible local bar anywhere near there. I think we were on the Dingle Peninsula, and after we had food and it was getting a little late and we were about to leave, all of a sudden this whole troupe of musicians came into the bar, and the bar was packed with locals, and they sat down and they pulled out their instruments, and the entire bar, all the locals, started taking turns singing Irish folk tunes, and all these professional musicians were playing along with them, and it was one of the coolest things I had had, like, sort of like Annie was talking about her musical experience, like a very rigid, like, you learn music and you play in an orchestra and you do this and it's all very structured because that's America, and to have that experience there where everyone knew from childhood all the same tunes and these local musicians knew all the music and were really good at playing it, and, like, it would, the age range was huge. It was like,
there were teenagers in that bar, and then there was also like an 80-year-old woman who sang a song. So anytime I hear that song, or probably really any Irish ballad at this point, I think of being physically in that space, and I can see their faces, and I saw them once, and I can see their faces and hear their voices, and yeah, that's mine, at least for this.
Saved our souls and mind them well. Tomás and Sean Keneally.
Hello. there are several songs that I'm trying to think of. Music is an important part of my life. Not because I have, like, any, I don't know, there's no musicians in my family, but it was just something that it was always played in my house, or just wherever we were staying at. So growing up, I listened to a lot of, like, old school music because of my parents, but specifically gospel music was something that, you know, I grew up in the church, so was a huge influence in my life. There are several songs that I can think to, but that's why I was looking through my playlist to find the particular song, because it just reminds me of that upbringing. But as I'm looking through a song, can I just name artists?
Sure.
Artists that I think are very influential in my upbringing, I'd say Earth, Wind, and Fire. I grew up listening to them because of my father. They're actually my favorite band that I continuously listen to. Michael Jackson. My mom is a huge MJ stan, so I had no choice but to like Michael Jackson. Mahalia Jackson, the Clark sisters. Donnie Hathaway, Stevie Wonder, and a lot of different jazz artists too. John Coltrane, of course. Sarah Vaughan, but yeah, the music is a huge influence, so it's like hard for me to think of like one thing that has memories tied to it, but the song that I would say is the one that's coming to my mind now, I'm trying to look for it. I have a lot of playlists, I'm sorry. Let me try to find it. It's called You've Been So Faithful by Eddie James and the Phoenix Mass Choir. And it's just a song that I remember growing up listening to, especially during very difficult times in my life. And that's just a song that usually pops up. But music is a huge part of my psyche, I think, as an individual.
Your mercy that we are not consumed, because thy compassions fail nothing I do every morning. Great is thy faithfulness, great is thy faithfulness. As I look back over my life,
could ever repay in love or what you got for me. I can lose myself cause then you set me free. How you made a way out of the way. Turn my darkness into day. You fit my joy in the time of sorrows. Hope for my tomorrow. Peace in the time of storm. Strength when I'm weak and worn. I can never repay.
But there is a song that really sticks out in my childhood, which is the song that my sister had to do a dance routine to. And I feel like in my childhood brain, she was practicing this dance routine for like a year of my life, but it was probably only a few weeks. But it was like an 80s song, maybe early 2000s, that even just the beginning of it really sticks in my head. And anytime I hear the beginning, I have to skip it, which is probably why I now can't remember the name of it. I've kind of blocked it out. But
can you sing?
Yeah.
No, I honestly cannot remember how it goes. And I can kind of see the cover of it, but I think I'm conflating a few things. Mm. So I'll try to dredge it up. But
is it like a popular 80s song?
Yes, it is a popular 80s song.
We're going to spend the next...
I know, I'm trying
to... No, we're not going in this. Okay. Wait, I will discover it because I will just text my mom. But... I do remember it kind of like endlessly playing in my house because my sister couldn't get the routine. And so it was just like over and over. She would restart. I was probably like 8 years old or something. And she must have been, well, she couldn't have been five, whatever. But it really sticks out and is distinct in my childhood brain.
Like,
I can choose many songs that are very important, but if I'm being honest with myself, there is one song that I have not been able to get out of my head since this December.
Hmm? Earworm.
What?
An earworm.
Well, there is a very emotional reason to it, and it's a very heavy, it could be a very heavy discussion, but if people can go through it, we can at least listen to the story behind it. So December 2024 is when the genocide in Gaza was at like the top, like at its most extreme. And I was just I was just scrolling through my Instagram, and there was this one TikTok that just made me very happy because they finally got the children, like a lot of children, like at least 500 to 600 children safely in a hospital called the Al Ahli Hospital in Gaza. And there was this TikTok of a young doctor, probably my age, who was in charge of a group of those children. And he made a TikTok using this song called Salute to Gaza, which I'm looking at. Like, it's a song that's been produced by the Norwegian ministry. And it's just a salute to Gaza. It was released like many years ago, and it's a beautiful song. I don't understand Arabic, but the song has an ensemble. It's like it's just children in a choir singing in a very beautiful rhythm. And so this doctor used this song as the background for this TikTok, and I loved it. The next morning, everything was blown to pieces, and I will never forget the first moment I heard this song. And that has been like a very, very, like, this is, I think, the only memory that I have with music that is so strong and so intense that I cannot, like, if I hear that song from a far away, I cannot stop but cry. The moment I saw them alive on my screen the next morning, it was all over the news that they bombed the hospital and all the children were dead. And because the song is also sung by children, we don't even know how many of them are alive anymore. Yeah, that is a very intense music, but yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
You are listening to Is Sound a Language? On WRCT Pittsburgh, produced by the students in Contextual Practice Seminar. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily express those of WRCT Pittsburgh or its members.
My sister and I, when we were little, we would go camping a lot, and we would go to these campsites, and there were lots of people around, but we would just talk in gibberish and pretend like we were talking a different language. And even though we didn't know what each other was saying, we were convinced that anyone who heard us speaking to each other mm-hmm. would know that we were not speaking English, and that we were, what, I don't know.
Can you demonstrate?
Different. I can't. I wouldn't even know how to do it.
Because of the universality of it, it's like really hard. Even when I'm speaking my own language, I'm so accustomed to using many English words that people would know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But we're
not forced to learn any other language to make it anywhere.
Right.
Yes. I mean, and that's actually frustrating. I have found it frustrating.
When I was in Taiwan over the break, whenever I would interact with somebody and they would start to speak to me in Chinese because I spoke Chinese, and I would respond in Chinese, but then they could tell that I was not Chinese.
Yeah.
And then they would start speaking to me in English, and then I would be speaking to them in Chinese and they would be speaking to me in English because we were both trying to be polite.
Mm.
But it was not the most effective way to communicate.
That is so interesting. I have a question for you. So when you went to China,
Taiwan,
and like
contentious
in local markets, did they overcharge you when they could find out that you had an accent and like you were coming from the West? Because like that's totally a thing in Pakistan. I mean, they would overcharge.
I think I should pay a small tax. But I went, my partner is white, so I would tell him to walk a little further away from the market so that, you know, we wouldn't really get taken. Mm. But, you know, I'm a pretty good haggler. I learned it from my dad, so I know when to walk away.
This brings us back to the question of our entire class, which is sound a language?
Yeah.
With my question to Annie, that is what I was wondering, because like even the slightest accent in your language will, like people from abroad, like who grew up in the West, will have a certain accent when they speak in Urdu, and that will, like when you're in a local market, the word gets around and people will know that, oh, that person, and then they will overcharge you.
But I think that there are definitely sounds that are context based. Or ways of speaking, or ways of using humor that are context-based that don't translate to across
mm-hmm.
cultures.
Definitely.
Or across geographic spaces.
I agree, and this is an interesting conversation that I was having during a studio visit. All of you know like the work that I'm making with laughter, and then the question was posed, can the sound of laughter be culturally specific? And my first response was, no, laughter is universal. Everyone laughs. And the professor, they were like, no, think about how laughter also can be culturally specific. And I think the question of is sound a language falls into the similar category.
I think about how impolite it is to eat loudly here.
Mm-hmm.
And I just grew up like with Chinese people who eat, you know, voraciously and loudly, and we like to chew and smack and share food and talk with our mouths open, and we're so rude. And so when I left home and had a roommate, she was like, Annie, you cannot do this. Like, you cannot eat chips, like, near me. And my partner also has, like, misophonia.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever we're we're eating, I noticed like he like turns the TV on really loud because he like he like can't stand it,
uh-huh.
but he also doesn't want to, you know, be racist and tell me to eat quieter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah. So that feels really culturally specific.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I encountered a very similar thing with my ringtones or when my phone rings. Like, I was sat down by two very dear friends within the MFA program, and they were like, okay, it is socially unacceptable in America to have your ringtone on. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then they explained that, okay, people can be neurodivergent, people can have, like, people can be really pushed off if you, like, and they would assume that you don't want to talk to them just because. And for me, it's such a background noise. I have never thought about the sound of my phone in that way. So it can be very culturally specific.
That is also something that is developed because technology has developed mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. quickly.
Mm-hmm.
My husband also keeps his ringer on,
mm-hmm.
and it drives me insane.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm always just like, don't you hear that you're getting text messages? Yeah.
There are flip phones and like sliders and they're like Bop-Its, like they went in every direction. And there were like these little toys. And but before we got the phones, we would get toys of those phones
mm-hmm.
that would like record like 20 seconds of whatever you wanted and then you could play it back so you could simulate the experience of having a phone.
Mm.
And then ringtones were like a thing too, right? Like it was like,
yeah, there was a point at which everyone had ringtones.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody was like, ringtones are on because I want to show off my new like Britney ringtone.
It's interesting what you said about like before having the phone, you had a mini version of it,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking of like how sound becomes a souvenir. So like. Makkah is a cult, like the Islamic, so
mm-hmm.
what transports the iconography to the rest of the Muslim population. So sound.
Hi, I'm Melinda Crawford, a Scottish fiddler, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
You're listening to WRCT's annual Massive Music Weekend,
where our DJs are showcasing some of their favorite artists in half-hour blocks.
That's 60 hours of programming divided into 120 artist blocks all weekend long.
Check out the complete schedule at wrct.org.
Thanks for listening. And now back to the music.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself. Surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Hey, look, everyone, it's Mando!
Ready?
Well, hello there, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Whiskey Before Breakfast Radio, or the Roots program, depending on where you are located. I am Mando Richard, and my friend Clint Hoover, a fine harmonica player of many different styles, is with me today, and he'll be joining us after the first set of music here. Of course, it'll be a liquored up set, but there'll be something else going on there, and then we've got a folk rock set in the middle and a gospel set at the end. We usually begin with just a liquored up set, since we are Whiskey Before Breakfast Radio. But last week, I let a bad word slip through. Oh, no. So we're going to mix in some liquored up songs and some penitential songs about that very item. Here comes the first song from Hank Williams Jr.
Hank
son Kid Rock. And I don't really like this stuff they call hip-hop, but he's sure been good to me, and I'm still trying to make him see. In country music, you just can't say the F word. Sheldon says he's been having a hard time. Yeah, he does great shows, but he's just gotta speak his